the Football League podcast, staying put despite a lucrative offer from the Middle East. Coming up, the shoe fits for Bolton. Last week's pod, Stevenage took that personally. And a mascot with its own social media account. That is so 2009. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And we're back with you a day later than your regularly scheduled podcast. We were just so desperate to wait for news of Bolton's new manager that we thought we'd hold it back for 24 hours. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I'm joined by my two usual cohorts. Hello, Sam Parkin.
Hello, Matthew. How are you doing?
I can't smile wide enough, you know me. Adrian Clark's back with us too. You okay?
I'm all right, yeah. My beard isn't anywhere near in as good a shape as yours, is it? Goodness me. That is a beaut.
Needs a trim. There's a bit too much salt in with the pepper these days for my tastes, but that's the way it goes, isn't it? I think we're all suffering from that a little bit. Maybe suffering from some transfer fatigue as well. The window is nearly closed. We're going to have a look at a couple of movers and shakers shortly. But first, let me remind you that our partners, Quinbet, have a new offer for you. You can now get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £35, minimum three bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Quinn Casino. Even if your account is up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus for new UK customers only. Visit gambleaware.org for more information on responsible gambling. All right, let's do some manager transfer chat first today. And we shall start with the news that Bolton Wanderers have appointed former Plymouth and Stoke boss Stephen Schumacher as their head coach. He signed a 3.5-year deal. Julian Darby's been in caretaker charge since Ian Everett's dismissal, but now Schumacher takes over. He won promotion from League One with Plymouth Argyle with 101 points before moving on to Stoke, where he was sacked earlier this season. Sam, this feels like a great match for both. It's a lovely position for him to come into, right? As he's alluded to, Julian Darby's won both games in caretaker charge and they're on the fringes of the playoffs. It's not how you'd normally come into a new club.
No, from the outside looking in, feels like a really good fit. Location wise, perfect for him. Great club. And I think different style maybe slightly to Ian Everett, but I think they're both risk takers. I think Ian Everett, in terms of they were a possession-based team, loads of trust in them to take the ball in difficult spots. And I think Schumacher's different, but he likes attacking football. He'll flood bodies forward. They'll play fast, aggressive football. So I think he's a little bit different in terms of the style, but I think it's probably what's been called for at Bolton, certainly from the fans. They want a little bit more excitement. They probably want the team to be a little bit more front-footed and not at times maybe passive. I think it's a really good fit. It should be a really good fit. And I'm sure he's, with respect, quite glad he didn't get the Argyle gig, maybe, because he goes in with a team that have obviously still got a great opportunity of getting themselves in the mix this season rather than fighting relegation. So, yeah, really pleased. Spent a bit of time with him. Lovely chap. I think very humble. And hopefully this will go a damn sight better than the Stoke gig.
Interesting first set of games for him, Clark. You're just looking at it. He's got Reading on Saturday away from home, then Crawley and Shrewsbury, who, you know, obviously are in need of points before a tough run against Orient, Wrexham and Birmingham. So he's going to need to hit the ground running, but obviously he knows the league and he's highly motivated because he wasn't happy with the way that Stoke got rid of him. So he's got a point to prove.
Definitely. And I think that, yeah, I think he'll be hardworking, you know. Maybe one or two lessons he can learn, and he'll have reflected on what it was that Stoke didn't like about his management, and he'll probably be better for it if he can get that new manager bounce and take points in all of those games and maybe beat some of those big guns. Then Bolton are in with a great shout, aren't they, of getting into the playoffs. I think they've had a real bang average season given the quality of their squad, yet they could still easily go up. You know, that I'd actually fancy them now with him at the helm to sneak into the playoffs. At Stoke, I mean, Sam touched on it, you know, I hope it goes better than it did at Stoke. His win ratio at Stoke was 40%. That was the best at Stoke City this century. And they had a lot of managers. The manager that beat that was a guy called, remember Thordarson? Was he an Icelandic guy? It was pre-Pulis. Between 1999 and 2002, he had a better win rate, but no one since. So, you know, he's far from bad. And at Plymouth, wait for it, Schumacher, 52.78% win ratio. It is the greatest in Plymouth history. So, you know, he's clearly good. And I think Bolton have played a bit of a blinder here. It's one of those where others have hesitated to employ him. They've gone in there and got him. And because there wasn't much wrong, let's be honest, with Bolton's squad, I think he's got a great chance of steering them up.
Yeah, as we say, first game at Reading this weekend. We'll see how he gets on. A couple of moves that have caught our eye before we talk about the midweek action. Adrian was interested to see Louis Barry pitch up at Hull. Obviously, Villa wanted to have him tested a little bit more, having breezed through his two seasons on loan at Stockport. But that's an interesting landing place, right? I know they had that big win at Sheffield United, but we spoke about the pitch and their struggles. Do you think this is a good move for him?
Yeah, probably, because I think he'll play all the time. Hull don't have a lot of great quality in the positions that he wants to occupy. They needed someone of his style to come in. So now I think he'll play regularly. And look, it's just a notch up, isn't it, in terms of the level. Yeah, the pitch isn't great, but it's a good manager. A manager that wants to keep the ball on the floor and, you know, look to use him to link play and to get him, you know, on the ball in good areas. I think what happened here is Villa have a very good relationship with Hull after what happened with Jaden Philogene last year. Comes in as a brilliant loan spell, and then they take him back, don't they? So I think that maybe they're looking at something similar happening here. I know it's a different manager, but the fact that relationship is quite strong has probably played a part in it, really. And Celeste is a former Premier League manager. I think he's someone that can look after a player like Louis Barry and possibly improve him, because he's a coach. He's a coachy manager, isn't he, Ruben Celeste? So, no, I think this makes sense. It's a little bit surprised the Sheffield United thing didn't come off. They obviously, you know, had their eyes on one or two others, but Hull's a good landing spot, I think, for him.
One you've picked out for us, Sam, is one that has not been officially announced as we record, and that is Matt Grimes swapping Swansea for Coventry. Obviously, Swansea's captain, they've already announced that Ben Cabango is going to be taking that role. The two teams meet at the weekend. This is a weird one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a weird one, because he's just been, you know, part of the furniture there, and you know, given who his current manager or his ex-manager in Luke Willie and the type of football he likes, he's so imperative to that. He's such a Luke Williams player, Matt Grimes. You know, when he got that job, and I knew, obviously, Grimesy, having played with him, was such a big part of that Swansea team, just thought it was a match made in heaven. And he's been really pivotal for him. Gives me an opportunity to wheel out my Matt Grimes anecdote. The best debut I've ever seen, probably. I was in the side against AFC Wimbledon, played in midfield with Matt Oakley, so there's opposite ends of the spectrum there. Matt Grimes 17, Matt Oakley probably would have been 37 38, and they basically played 1-2s for 90 minutes. I have never seen anything like it. It was sensational from Grimes. I am really surprised that he hasn't gone on to become a top Premier League player. That's the regard I hold him in. There's still time, obviously, if this move goes well for him. But I think, you know, the opportunity to have a fresh start, fresh challenge, obviously financially, I think it's going to be really good for him, and to go and work with Lampard and Chris Jones and Joe Edwards. They'll really like him, and I'm sure that was a part of the attraction as well. But 10 years he's been at Swansea. I think he's had three children born in Wales, so I'm sure there was a bit of soul searching. It's been difficult for him, but the one thing with him, I think if he had physicality and a bit more kind of power, I think no question he'd be a Premier League player. But you know, that's probably not his strong suit. But what is his strong suit is attitude, his mindset, and his ability to take the ball in difficult spots on the pitch and keep it moving. He's a fantastic passer, and I would imagine that will be a very, very easy transition into the midfield of Coventry City.
What a blow, though, for Swansea. I mean, that at a time when they're feeling pretty rubbish
anyway.
They are
low, yeah, they are incredibly low.
It's not going well, is it?
Anyone else in the Championship, yeah.
yeah, it's not going well. The fans aren't happy. We've got no strikers. And then you lose your captain. I mean, that's going to go down like a lead balloon, isn't it? And you do wonder, you know, how's he going to pick everyone up? You know, it's not a good sign for Swansea.
Yeah, tough for them. Middlesbrough, Clarkie, are brought in Mark Travers on loan from Bournemouth for the rest of the season. Sam and I saw his last appearance. It was at Stamford Bridge a couple of weeks ago. He has played 5 times in the Premier League this season. He's an Ireland international. He's not coming into Middlesbrough to go in as number 2, is he? He'll be in presumably for the game we're going to talk about later against Sunderland on Monday.
Yeah, he comes straight in for that. Yeah, look, Senny Dieng has not been playing lately anyway, but he's done his Achilles. Don't think he's done it, you know, done it, but he's got an Achilles injury, so he's out. Sol Brin and Tom Glover have come in and done all right, but are they really, you know, if you look, got aspirations to get promoted to the Premier League, are they enough? And I think the answer probably is no. So Mark Travers makes perfect sense to me. I think he's been a bit unlucky, really. I know Kepa's done, by and large, very well for Bournemouth. But Travers, I was looking at the numbers in terms of Opta's numbers on him. Goals prevented. It's 4.5 extra goals he's prevented in 5 appearances, which is astonishingly good. So he's a goalie in form. And yeah, it's been a not problem position for Middlesbrough, but they haven't really been able to sort of settle on one long term, have they, under Carrick? So yeah, he'll provide a bit of stability, hopefully, in the short term. Yeah, you look at their team, and I know Latte Lat's probably going to leave, but they've got good players all over the pitch, and now they've got a very good goalie as well.
One that will probably be done by the time I hit publish on this episode is Harvey Vale from Chelsea to QPR. Sam, somebody who we know from Chelsea's academy sides, he's played for their first team as well. This is one that feels like a good move for everybody because they tried to flog him to Saudi Arabia in the summer window and he wasn't keen on that. Again, as we've kind of been saying, this is somebody who will go in and play every week, you would assume, albeit there's some competition at Rangers at the moment.
Oh, I'm not sure on that. Not probably after his last couple of seasons. It used to be a well-trodden path, this, it feels. You know, young lads from Chelsea just shifting to another part of West London down the road. So maybe not something we've seen too regularly recently. I don't know what they're getting, really, having not seen him so much over the last couple of seasons. I think he looks like he's got a really good attitude, Harvey Vale. I think that's been exemplified by him obviously not moving in the summer and having to remain at Chelsea and be a bit of a bit part player.
But captain the under-21s for up until the last couple of weeks and he scored loads of goals, and you're right, his attitude's been excellent.
Yeah, so
could have forgiven him for it not being.
Yeah, and I think there was that period with Lewis Baker, wasn't there, where obviously a little bit older, but similarly he missed out during a window and had to turn out for the development squad and did brilliantly. So yeah, absolutely, I would echo that, and obviously got a few minutes in the first team relatively recently. It's where he probably fits in to this QPR lineup. They're more of a 4-3-3 now, with a sitter, 2 kind of pushed on 8s. I'd imagine he'd play one of the wide roles, but he's not a flying winger, is he? He'll come in off the line, lovely left foot, probably play on the right-hand side. He can play as a 10, but QPR aren't really going with that at the moment. But great opportunity for him, I think, to get back going. I think he'll be an asset. I don't think he'll probably come in and get loads of minutes initially, but as the season goes on, I'm sure we'll see him. And hopefully this will be the making of him, because he had a few disappointing loan moves where it didn't work out and he needs to get playing regular football now.
And the last one is Milenic Ali, who's gone from Exeter to Luton. Now, I saw him, Clarkie, score 2 goals in midweek in a really dreadful Exeter performance. So I'm sure he's absolutely thrilled about this. But the need for Luton is great, right? There's not going to be a bedding in period afforded to him. They need goals and they need points quickly. Again, are you imagining that he comes straight into the team?
I just don't know. I don't know what Luton are doing. Don't know what they're doing. Like, Kone, obviously they've gone for him. It looks like he's staying put. Ali's obviously the second choice, a lot cheaper, but still costing $1.5 million. But they've got guys that scored goals in the Premier League last year. It's a weird situation. I know they haven't delivered this year, but I don't know. Is this player better than what they've got already? I don't know whether he is. You've got to remember, 7 of his 9 goals this season have come since December the 21st. Is it a hot patch? or is he the real deal? I don't know. I don't think Luton will know. What I will say is that Bloomfield knows the league because he's been in it with Wickham. He's seen him play a few times. But look, you know, I've looked at his record, National League, League One. He got 11 goals last season when he half a season at Halifax, half at Exeter. And that's the only time he's made double figures in a season. He's 24. So I think it's quite a risk, really, this. I think it's a bit of a step up. He might be brilliant. He might be brilliant. But it strikes me that this could just be a hot patch for the player. And that on the back of it, he's got a dream move.
Yeah, they've done the Asgard as well, haven't they, from Wigan, who I think was far and away Wigan's best player.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know, at championship level, not sure thing. And Naismith's come in from Bristol City, who you would think will be a sure thing, especially given that he's been there and been really good for Luton in the past. And I think it was Nathan Jones, probably. But with Asgard, yeah, there's no guarantee, is there, that he's going to hit the ground running. He's certainly one that will be, I think, an outstanding player in the future, but they need results now. And it just feels like, you know, maybe the, you know, it's a little bit hopeful that they're going to be able to find that consistency straight away. So it is, I concur with what Clarkie's saying. It's a bit of a head scratcher at the moment, Luton.
Away to Sheffield Wednesday, then away to Sunderland, then at home to Sheffield United. Next three games, ouch. All right, we'll talk about some of the stuff that happened in midweek next. A word on Burnley v Leeds from Monday. The word is dismal, and we shall move on quickly. Sam, you saw Millwall at Portsmouth the week. I say you saw it. I mean, you sort of saw it, didn't you? Because you had that fantastic, poorly placed press box pillar proving problematic for you.
Yeah, that's the new gantry's just up above. So, yeah, there's a little bit of scaffolding or whatever you'd call it in front of you, so it's quite difficult from the old radio spots now to get a good view. Listen, I thought Millwall were incredibly good defensively. Scott Minto was sat a couple of seats away from me, and at full time, you know, it's quite a rarity, I think, you know, an away victory where they've defended basically for the majority of the game for us to be leaving with kind of the sentiment we both had, which was that was a brilliant, brilliant away performance. They have just got at the moment four defenders in Brian, Cooper, Tanganga and Kramer, the lad that they've signed recently from Brentford, who's a centre half having to play right back because McNamara and Leonard both got injured in the same game a couple of weeks ago. He's outstanding currently, and the other four just love defending the box. I mean, it was just an outstanding defensive performance where Portsmouth really ran out of ideas, and they did everything. John Messinho changed things early. He went two up front quite early in the second half. He went to a back three in the tail end. He asked copious amounts of questions of Millwall and their back line. But that four that I just mentioned, and Liam Roberts, obviously the number two goalkeeper who's getting an opportunity now, was brilliant. And Tanganga gets better and better and better. I mean, I don't think there's a better centre-half maybe outside of the Burnley two in the division at the moment. And I think it gets probably blown up out of proportion that people suggest he's maybe not good enough on the ball, and that was a reason that he didn't make the grade at Premier League level or didn't previously. I think that's probably about to change. I think he's more than good enough to go and play Premier League football again, and he was exquisite again on the night. And the goal in the first half, not really in keeping with the first half, the lack of quality maybe in the game, but Bangura Williams, who I think Alex Neil deserves enormous credit for putting him in and continually playing him. The craft, the skill for him and Casper Dunor, I think it was on the near touchline. Lovely weighted pass, and Ivanovic just scores the most amazing little dinked finish. And I always just question the decision making when a striker does that. I remember Nunez doing it at Brentford, was it last season or earlier this season? You go 1v1. It is the hardest finish to execute when you're running at speed, going in on the goalkeeper. And if it goes wrong, it looks terrible. But my goodness me, it was a thing of beauty. So a brilliant goal. And again, credit to Alex Neil for putting the two young lads in and starting them in the last couple of games. And just a huge, huge 3 or 4 days for Millwall. But Pompey have improved the squad. They, I think, need a little bit of creation, you know, when they're playing against teams such as Millwall who don't want to have the ball. I think when Portsmouth can get in the faces of better footballing sides, that's when they're at their strongest. So they're a little bit, yeah, they're probably Millwall are a bit like Portsmouth kryptonite, you know, that type of team that don't want to have the ball, where Portsmouth can't press them high because they obviously play a little bit long themselves. So I think a little bit of creativity towards the tail end of the window and Portsmouth should be fine.
Yeah, as for Millwall, close to the playoffs and the relegation zone in terms of points now, so looking good for them. In League One, how about this, Adrian? Stevenage winning at Wrexham. What were we saying last week about the fact they never score away from home? They went and did three at the racecourse, only four all season. I mean, this has got to go down as the upset of the season in League One, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's a real shock, isn't it? Yeah, I think they sort of beat Wrexham up, which is not something that they're used to. I know that Phil Parkinson was really unhappy with the sort of fight among his players. So, yeah, I mean, real shock. And Stephen is just, yeah, fresh off the back of that win at Barnsley, go and turn them over as well. What a week, what a season they're having, really, defensively, Stevenage. So yeah, I'm delighted for them, absolutely thrilled. In terms of things I picked out as well, I wanted to mention Burton, 3-2 winners against Reading, 2-0 up, then it was 2-2, then it was 3-2, they won.
What a turnaround they're having under Gary Bowie. We didn't see it coming, did we?
No, three wins and a draw in across the last 2 weeks. Roman Burrell has come alive, five goals in 2025 so far. Those goals, by the way, from Burrell were 7 points to Burton, who are now sort of within touching distance of safety. The new signings are all flying. John Daddy Bodvarsson, 4 goals. He came in from Wrexham, didn't he? JJ and McKinnon in midfield, loves to crash the box. He's got a goal and an assist and played well against Reading. And then the left back, who they got on loan from Burnley, Owen Dodgson, has got 3 assists in 4 games. And in this match, lovely left wing cross for Burrell to score the winner. So, yeah, Gary Bowie is coming and delivered. All of his main decisions and changes have completely come off. So, yeah, congratulations to him. And now you think, well, Burton have got a chance. Also wanted to mention Wickham. They won with a last-minute goal against Barnsley. Kone gets a brace, 1 pen. And then one at the end. The goal at the end, Sam would have enjoyed the movement, I'm sure. The ball's on the right. I think it's Gareth McCleary. And he makes 2 or 3 different runs. And in the end, he sort of does a little back pedal to get space between the centre halves. And it's a bullet header from a very, very good cross to win the game. So, yeah, they're doing really well. They've had such a busy month, Wickham. 8 new faces have come in, which is great, isn't it? You know,
it's interesting when you're signing players and the players don't know who the manager's going to be.
Yeah, it's mad, really. I mean, I did do that at Southend, which was a bit daft, but I had been on loan previously. But you shouldn't really do that. But yeah, Sam Grace is doing a good job. He brought on all the subs after Barnsley went down to 10 men and changed it. And I thought the red card was really harsh, actually, on Mark Roberts. It was an industrial challenge on Kone, but not a red for me. And it did change the game. So, yeah, Wickham march on. And obviously with Wrexham slipping up lately, suddenly Wickham are in with a great shot. So I think that's where, obviously they've lost a couple of players, Wickham, this month. But to add 8 when you're going for promotion shows they're serious. They're not messing around, are they?
I was watching Leighton Orient continue their incredible run at the moment. They thrashed Exeter 6-2 at St James Park. Sam, I was thinking maybe we could just do the whole pod on Jamie Donnelly's assist, one of the two. And then he scored the goal as well. Goodness me. I mean, that is fantastic. But your old club Exeter, they're looking bad shape to me. I know they've got defensive injuries, but Gary Caldwell might be at risk. They've got the game against Forest in the Cup to come soon. But yeah, not great from them. But Orient flying in the Sam Parkin derby.
Yeah, and I think given what Clarke and yourself just said about Burton, there's going to be a few teams just above the dotted line that are going to be getting a bit twitchy. I think they're in touching distance now as well with Northampton under Kevin Nolan. I mean, you wouldn't have thought this was possible when you saw Burton. I saw Burton maybe 6 weeks or so ago and they were such a low ebb. So, yeah, he deserves enormous credit, Gary Bowyer, for what he's done there. You've got Peterborough that feel like a little bit in free fall as well. I think they've won one of the last handful of games. Bristol Rovers lost back to back now as well. So yeah, it's a worrying time at Exeter after, you know, having a pretty eye-catching start to the season where, you know, it looked for a period that this was going to be a season where they could be looking up. So yeah, difficult times for them. I love the assist, probably over the goal from Donnelly. Donnelly. I saw him early part of the season at Brentford in the League Cup and kind of made a mental note, looked like a good player. That pass, though, if people haven't seen it, it's kind of through the eye of a needle, isn't it? Crossfield. I don't know if it's a volley or a half volley. It's just one of those that you see the lads doing in the warm-up, don't you, sometimes? And it's very rare that you see it executed like that in a first-team game. I mean, yeah, people try it and it doesn't normally come off. It is an absolute peach to not only, well, it puts someone in on goal, doesn't it? So it's a brilliant bit of play and they're playing with such confidence, as are Charlton. I wanted to mention them. You know, what a turnaround for Nathan Jones. They are, you know, incredibly consistent now. I think the squad's looking a lot better. I think having Lee Byrne back available, I don't think he started midweek, but I think getting their players back, Lloyd Jones has just signed a new contract as well, massive part of their defensive unit. So things really looking up for Charlton and Leyton Orient. Could have certainly one of those teams from London in the playoffs come the end of the season.
The League One's always great, isn't it, when you get to this time?
Best league this year, most competitive, I think.
Yeah, quite often is that way at both ends of the table. You wanted to touch briefly, Sam, on a couple of League Two results. No surprise that one of them came from Super Ian Holloway, whose Swindon revolution continues to gather pace and put the sceptics in their place.
Yeah, I don't want to draw attention to it, but I think they did go bottom, didn't they, around about 5 or 6 weeks ago. So to see them 16th now.
Did his missus exercise the ghost at the training ground? Is that what happened here?
Quite possibly.
She might have had a couple of goes at it because it didn't work straight away, did it?
Still needs to exercise their away day woes, although they did win at Newport last time out. But yeah, there's a bit of a contrast because the majority of the results are coming at the county ground, which is no bad thing. 5 wins and a draw in the last 6. Another late show against Tranmere. Harry Smith getting the kind of pivotal second. And all of a sudden, I'm looking at a bench which has got Shamanga coming off it, Tom Nichols, a recent signing. I mean, things are looking up and he deserves enormous credit for recognising their shortcomings very quickly and changing the style of play. You got to play to Harry Smith's strengths and he's put some really tidy units together, I think, in his spell. So 13 points above Carlisle in 23rd. I mean, that's incredible, deserves enormous credit. And the other team I wanted to pick out ahead of the weekend is Bradford, who are 6 wins in 7. I don't know if you've seen this, Clarkie, but it's coincided latterly last 4, I think, or certainly the last 3 without Andy Cook. So what he's done is playing 2 tens, Sarsavic and Poynton behind Kavanagh, 2 young lads who I think the Bradford fans are really excited about coming into the season, but haven't been particularly consistent. Last few weeks, all of the aforementioned players have scored. Patterson's getting goals from midfield. So reliant on Andy Cook for so long in this run of games, 6 wins in 7 different scorers. So maybe it's just been holding them back a little bit and it's given them an opportunity to play slightly differently. And these more technical players are probably receiving the ball on the deck between the lines. And it's proved really pivotal in this upturn. So they go to Wimbledon tomorrow, 4th v 6th, huge game in the hunt, I would say. Both teams still for one of those automatic positions.
Yeah, Doncaster got 49 points in 2nd, Crewe in 5th, just 2 points behind them again. Looks like an interesting promotion race, that. We are going to turn our attention to some weekend games next. And given that it's a tight turnaround between us recording and these games kicking off, it might be a bit more of a general how are the teams doing this season kind of chat. Hopefully, Liam Manning's got his bobble hat and his winter coat back because he is in for a frosty reception when he goes to the Kassam Stadium with his current club, Bristol City, to take on his old one, Oxford. Sam, you were desperate to talk about Oxford, such is your passion for them as a former Swindon man. Gary Rowett still unbeaten in the league. First Oxford manager to win his first three games. 9 points clear of trouble. Are we calling them safe now then?
Oh, I'll have to be on it, won't I, tomorrow, given that I'm working on this one. I'll have to be very nice about my old rivals, Oxford United. I've heard this on various podcasts and I will relay it to you two. No team in this position at this stage of the season with as many points have ever been relegated from the Championship. Is that reverse psychology, I hear you say? No, it's not. It's a fact. Again, there's teams in a similar position now. I think Coventry being one, you could probably add one or two more teams who we're talking about potential playoff hopefuls. So, you know, Oxford in their current guise should not be fearing relegation. I think it's probably a too great a ask to think that they're going to get themselves in the playoff mix, but unbeaten in eight, made a really savvy appointment, looking good, not only defensively, as we would have anticipated under Gary Rowett, but going forward, really exciting. I think the unpredictability maybe of Dembele and Placetta, obviously he's reconfigured the front line a little bit with Rodriguez playing a bit higher. You've got Bradshaw coming in, a player who's prospered incredibly under Gary Rowett's management previously. And I don't know if you saw this, but Ole Romney has come in from Utrecht, record signing. So they've paid a few quid. They've made some big moves in the transfer window to improve them further in an attacking aspect. And looking forward to seeing where he's going to fit in. I think he's a 10 or can play off the flanks. Technical player, probably going to be someone to, yeah, add a little bit of goal power and also a little bit of creativity. And probably, well, absolutely, come into this game against a bit of an inconsistent Bristol City as favourites. 1-4 on the spin at the Kasam. I would probably anticipate this being very tight and maybe shaded by the home side once more.
Also, Alex Matos in from Chelsea's academy side.
Good point, well made.
Played a lot for Huddersfield last season. He's a decent midfield player too. So we're talking there, Clarky, about one club splashing the cash. Then you come to Bristol City, who, whenever anybody talks about them, say, how Bristol City never been in the Premier League, not been in their top flight since 1980. Here, Manning's got them in with a shout at the playoffs, right? And yet he says it's unlikely that we'll bring anyone in between now and deadline day. Feels like one of those clubs where the lack of investment in the squad is bordering on, as Alex Neil would say, nearly criminal, because they've got a chance, right? It's such a well set up club. It's got a massive supporter base, great ground. Why not just have that one extra push, try and get you up?
Yeah, that's the angle I wanted to take with Bristol City. So you've read my mind completely. I've said it before that they're a world coach group that he needs more resources. If he gets more resources, I think Liam Manning can take Bristol City up. I do, but he need a fair bit more resources, obviously. But just a little bit would be nice in the short term. And really, players are going. You know, they've let Naismith go to Luton. Atkinson's gone on loan as well. Maiulu, they've got rid of the striker. So, but no one's coming in. I mean, at the top end of the pitch, and probably in defence, they need to be better. You know, I really like the midfield, sort of a Bird and Knight, and then you got Twine and Mometi ahead. They're four really good players that are thriving. But yeah, I think at the back and up top, they need better quality. To if they got a couple of good players, they can gate crash the playoffs. I've got no doubt about that. So yeah, it's weird really to think that Oxford are showing more ambition than Bristol City, but that's the way it's going at the moment. Bristol City's away form's not great, I've got to say. Three draws and four losses away from home since their last win on the road in November at Norwich. So really, you know, you've got to say Oxford are in with a good shout here of staying unbeaten.
We shall see. Well, let's hope this coming Monday's Championship offering gives us more to enjoy than what they're calling the trauma at Turf Moor. It is Middlesbrough versus Sunderland at the Riverside Stadium. We mentioned Mark Travers going to Borough already, Clarky. They could be out of the playoff places by the time this game kicks off. A little bit inconsistent of late. Results not maybe been as good as Michael Carrick would have hoped for.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, it was such a hard watch, wasn't it? The Burnley Leeds. I mean, it was horrible. So negative. Anyway, I got to say, I think this will be a tight game as well. I was looking at some of the... I was looking at Borough, actually, and their games against the teams in the top eight this season. They've had 9 matches against the teams in the top eight. eight of those matches have seen two goals or less. So Carrick tends to sort of be nice and solid and not over expansive in these kind of matches. It's a derby as well. So I think it'll be low scoring. Look, there's a bit of activity. Obviously, Zai Jones is gone. Matt Clark's gone. Hamilton, Zivera are gone. Edmondson's joined permanently. Morgan Whittaker's in. Ryan Giles is in. So obviously we got that. You got the potential of having a sort of a three behind the front player, Conway, I guess, of Doak, Azaz and Whittaker. That's pretty exciting, isn't it? Latte Lat looks like he's on his way to Atlanta for 22 and a half million, 50 grand a week. You can't really complain about Middlesbrough's decision there with a player. Yeah, it's quite tempting, I would imagine. So yeah, overall, I think Middlesbrough have been too inconsistent. Two wins from eight. But yet, they're still in the playoff picture, aren't they? And that shows you that just a little bit of improvement between now and the end of the season should see them make it. They score lots of goals, Borough. Over the piece, even though they've conceded very few against the big boys, they do let in too many goals, maybe sloppy goals in the matches they should win. But here, I think there'll be a full focus. They'll want to keep out Sunderland's bright attackers. There'll be a heavy emphasis on that. And then hope for a bit of magic from Azaz, Whittaker, Doak and co. So yeah, looking forward to the game, but I don't think it'll be many goals in it.
What about Sunderland, Sam, coming to this game having lost just one of their last 11, but they haven't won at the Riverside since 2012 in an FA Cup tie. Any chance that they can change that here?
I think so. Defensively very good recently on the road, conceded one in the last three away games. Obviously they were probably the slightly better side at Burnley, and I saw them at Derby where they were good value. Obviously they had that kind of ghost goal, or whatever you want to describe it as, a perfectly good goal disallowed for whatever reason. Nobody seems to know. So yeah, they've been pretty good. One defeat in 10. I did touch on it maybe on the previous pod or a couple of weeks ago about this run of away games now. All top half, I think, that they face. Starting with Middlesbrough, Leeds, Sheffield Wednesday, Coventry, West Brom, Norwich. These are difficult games coming up. Teams that are actually still got an opportunity, I think, of forcing their way into the promotion reckoning. So teams that are improving, teams that are getting players back, teams that have probably added during the window. So this is the start of a difficult run away from home. And it's probably one of the first times, I think, in the aftermath of the Plymouth draw that Regis Labrie has come in for a little bit of criticism. I think tactically maybe slightly negative in contrast to what he has been this season, just sitting on the lead when they got back to 2-1, which if it comes off, nobody complains. But Argyle obviously snatched a point late on. He kind of went into a 5-4-1. He played a kind of orthodox holding defensive midfielder in Abdul Samed. It was his first start, and that was meaning that Maendo and Rigg were on the bench. So I expect one of those to come back in and then probably reshape the look to the side in an attacking sense. So yeah, that was disappointing, I think, for the Sunderland fans, how that game ended. One thing I have noticed, they've lost the most points, 11, after the 75th minute, but bizarrely, six teams have conceded more goals in the last 15 minutes. So they're crucial ones that are going in to their net that have cost them wins and draws at one point or another this season. And Middlesbrough, really strong finishers. Only Norwich and Leeds scored more goals in the last 15 minutes of games. So something to keep an eye out for. And yeah, maybe just that game management letting them down last time out.
Yeah, let's hope that it's not a 0-0 draw like we saw on Monday. Let's head into League One. Wrexham looking to put that shock defeat against Stevenage behind them. They go to Crawley. Clarkie, they're aiming to avoid back-to-back league defeats for the first time this season. It's obviously just been an upward trajectory for them for a few years now. First time that there's a little bit of stick flying about. I had a look at the comments on the BBC Wrexham page. Loads of their fans were piling in on Paul Mullin, saying that he's passed it, which felt a bit harsh to me given what he's done for the club. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's been good vibes all the way for, what, 3-4 years. This is a test, as Graham Taylor once said.
Yeah, completely agree with that. Yeah, I think Parkinson's under a bit of pressure. The big name players, because when players want big money, we all know that they're earning plenty that you've got to deliver, haven't you? And if you're not, then people have something to say about it. It's just the nature. It doesn't matter what's gone on before. They don't care. It's about the here and now. And you look at the goal count and, you know, the none of their strikers who are earning good whack have scored more than six goals this season. Fletcher's got six. Palmer and Mullen have got three apiece. Marriott had five early on, but then got injured. So strikers haven't really delivered. And then I was looking at some of the defensive numbers. You know, they've, you know, 13 teams have faced fewer shots than Wrexham. They've been a bit open. Birmingham, for example, have faced over 100 less shots than Wrexham. So defensively, maybe not as tight as you'd expect them to be. Only one clean sheet in the last nine games. What I will say is there'll be a different style of match here. Obviously, they got roughed up a bit by a big, strong, physical, athletic, well-organised Stevenage. Shrewsbury are a little bit like that as well, where they lost. So you could ask, has the riches and the publicity, has it softened them up a bit? Don't know, but I'm just throwing it out there. This will be more of a football game, wouldn't it? From a Crawley end, they'll want the ball and look to pop it around. Maybe that'll suit Wrexham a little bit more, but they need a win, don't they? Three defeats in five, you know, away form's been a bit iffy. So yes, if they want top two, which clearly they do, this is the sort of match they have to win.
Probably go and sign a striker for £10 million over the weekend or something. Sam, what about Crawley? What a win that was for them at Mansfield. But Rob Elliott could do with some more victories at home if he's going to win people round. Only won three home league games all season.
Yeah, I think they've only had the four wins in his 18 games so far. So it's not been a quick fix or a vast upturn in their fortunes. I like the look of their side all of a sudden. John Jewell supporting Hepburn Murphy. That's exciting in attack. I'm sure Clarkey is more familiar with this chap than me. Bradley Ibrahim, I think, came through at Arsenal. He's playing really well. Midfield, breaking things up. They've got Matthew Cox, a loanee from Brentford in goal, who's getting some rave reviews as well. And, yeah, eye-catching result at Mansfield. 17 shots. On Mansfield's goal, which is not something you'd maybe associate with Crawley in recent times. So looking all of a sudden more threatening. And I probably should have mentioned Crawley when we were talking about League One and potential relegation candidates earlier, because they've given themselves an opportunity. Two games in hand, 3 points from safety and Northampton. And yeah, absolutely concur with Clarkey there, setting the game up. Second for possession, Crawley. Wrexham, 16th. And what Wrexham don't have is a particularly good away record. Really struggled in that regard. Only our mate Stevenage have scored fewer than Wrexham on the road. 10 goals they've managed away from the race course. 31 goals at home, which I think is possibly the best in the division. So there's a huge contrast in their fortunes, home and away. And I give Crawley a chance in this game, but I just think sometimes when you get this type of matchup, maybe the power of Wrexham will prove too much.
We shall see. The League Two game we're looking at is Walsall against Salford. Walsall likely to be a League One concern next season. Matt Sadler said, Sam, there was always going to be a little bit of a sticky patch at some point. Feels like it's arrived now. We spoke a lot about Nathan Lowe and him going back to Stoke. That wasn't great for them, but the timing of Jamil Matt's injury then makes it even worse.
Yeah, I mean, I think he is just unplayable at times in League Two. They were a great combination. They were obviously a big reason for the cushion that they had at the top of the division. I don't think that gap is going to be maintained, if I'm being brutally honest. And I'm contradicting probably hugely from where I was a few weeks ago, because I think Walsall looked like an incredible side in League Two in all departments. But I just think, you know, losing those two is going to have a knock-on effect. Went with Adoma and Ethan Wheatley, Manchester United loanee, who's a young lad with very little experience. So they're going to want to add someone there, and they're going to have to hope that Jamil Matt's injury isn't too severe, so he can be back in there and obviously they can maintain their position at the top. It's not a crisis. If you look at the games, they had, I think, plenty on the goal against Fleetwood and limited them to next to nothing other than the two set pieces. The first one was a horrible one defensively. The second, really well-worked free kick. And Matt Sadler was very disappointed, because that's where they're particularly strong, especially in an attacking sense from set pieces. So very unlike them. The goalkeeper, I think, was at fault for maybe one of the goals as well in the last couple of games, possibly in that Bradford defeat where they didn't start particularly well. But yeah, I've seen enough to suggest that it's just a blip. They need to get that extra striker in, probably need Matt to be back playing and thriving, and I'm sure that they can bounce back in this game. The other one thing I will say, it's very high energy the way that they play. So is there going to be a little bit of fatigue setting in? The team hasn't changed too readily. I know he does Jealous for Lakin. Those two can kind of step in for one another. But other than that, it's a lot of the same players playing a lot of minutes. So is that just catching up with them a little bit? That's going to be up to the manager to maybe go slightly differently tactically at times. And obviously how he looks after the players, you know, off the pitch. Might need a couple of extra days off and a bit of paintballing.
What about Salford, Clark? Have they got a bit of a hangover after that smashing from Man City at the Cup, do you think? Lost two of three, drawn the other since then.
I reckon you've snuck a peek at my notes today, Matt, because you keep bringing up everything I wanted to bring up, which is great. Yeah. It's definitely a hangover. I mean, they'd had six clean sheets in a row. They get pumped at the Etihad Stadium, and all of a sudden, you know, two defeats and a draw, and then two red cards from Kouassi and Tyrese Fauna. Fauna, whose attitude was questioned on the radio when I was listening to that Salford game. The commentary team did not like his body language, and he got himself sent off as well recently. The manager changed the shape to a 4-3-3 for the last game, which was a 1-1 draw with Newport. They're still very good at the back. I think this could be a low scoring game with Walsall's woes up top. One of Salford's key strengths is their defending, you know, second best defensive record, and they're also unbeaten away to top half teams this season, Salford, which is a fantastic return. The points tally isn't great though, because five of those six games have been draws. So five draws, one win, no defeats on the road to teams in the top half of the table. So that's a pretty good effort. I like the centre halves. Tilt, obviously experienced player. Negru's having a good season. But they are missing their best sort of defensive midfielder, Asama Ashley, at the moment. And I think that might be a part of their struggles the last few weeks, because, you know, he was a great ball winner for them, or he is a great ball winner. And he's out of a calf injury. So, yeah, Salford wobbling a bit, but it's probably a good time to play Walsall, isn't it, at the moment? I think they can go there and definitely be competitive.
All right, 0-0 incoming in that one then, maybe. That's a prediction from me before we wrap up the show. Let's do our own predictions. I had the misfortune, Clarky, of being in Sam's company when the Chesterfield versus Port Vale score came through on the Vidi printer last week. Do you think he was humble about it?
No chance. Yeah, he's in a risk of sounding like Erling Haaland. You just got to stay humble, Sam. Yeah, you know, don't get ahead.
I think I knew that someone had the right result. I wasn't 100% sure it was me though, Matt. I said it rings a bell. I think those are the actual words.
Scores: Sam 43, because you got four last week. Me and Matt got 1 point apiece. So Sam 43, disappointingly. I'm on 32. Matt's on 26. So we need to pull something out, don't we? We need some on the nose, Matt.
Yeah, we do. We got three games this week to go at. Unfortunately, I shared this with the chaps with my predictions already in there. Let's see if that affects them. Blackburn Preston is a Friday night affair, a Lancashire hot pot, if you will. What's going to happen, Adrian?
Yeah, I genuinely haven't looked at your predictions. So if I copy them, it's accidental. I'm going to go for Blackburn to win this game. Preston are solid, we know that. It's not going to be high scoring. 1-0 Blackburn.
That's good. I'd gone 2-0 Blackburn. What do you reckon, Sam?
I think Preston gets something here. I'm more than happy to go with my standard 1-1 here, chaps.
What about Leighton Orient Stockport? Sam, you can have first dibs on this.
Oh, that's a big game. Let's go with Orient to keep going. 2 1-1 Leyton Orient.
I went 3-1 Orient. Now, Clarkie, I know you've already mentioned this on another podcast, so I reckon you've got a decent prediction in mind here.
Well, win to nil is my prediction on the other podcast. I mean, they've done it 7 times in their last 9 home games. Leyton Orient have 1-0. Stockport's away record isn't amazing against the better teams in the league. So I'm going to go, I'm going to go with a solid win for Leyton Orient. Let's just go 1-0 again. Let's go down that route. Yeah.
1-0 your way through to some points this week, maybe. Morecambe Fleetwood. Local pride at stake? Probably not quite, is it? Maybe not one for the purists either. I've gone for a 0-2 win for the Cod Army in this one. How about you, Adrian?
Yeah, so it's a pretty good shout. Fleetwood definitely getting better. Morecambe struggling. But I think they might get something here. Home, desperate for points. One apiece.
Sam, was that going to be your shout? It's your favourite.
Don't mind it. Obviously, the sensible bet is probably Fleetwood. They're a better side at the moment, but Clarkie's right. Derby, Derek Adams, they beat Tranmere relatively recently. Oh, can't do it. I will go 0-1.
Okay. All right, we'll let you know how we get on with those. Okay, before we get to our final feature, which is always Tweet of the Week, one more shout for our partners, Quinbet's offer, where you can now get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £35, minimum 3 bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Quin Casino. Even if your account is up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus only and for new UK customers. Visit gambleaware.org for more information on responsible gambling. To that tweet then, to finish off, it comes from Captain Cod at Captain Cod 23. I can barely get through this. I find it so offensive. Captain Cod says, brilliant atmosphere and what a fantastic performance from the team. I can't hide my excitement for the derby on Saturday now. Punching fist emoji, all caps, up the Cods, exclamation mark, fish emoji, and a picture of the man in the mascot outfit, or maybe woman, who knows, with two thumbs up. I'm with Arthur England here, Adrian, who's the first replier, who says, why is that kind of terrifying? Captain Cod does reply and say, thanks, mate, but we've got to be better than this now, haven't we? Fake accounts for mascots.
Well, who? I'd love to know who is taking on the personality of this mascot, because is it the person who's sort of physically inside the costume each week, or is it some random in the office? I'd like to know, is this an official account as well? You know, is it official? Do we know that? Has it got, it hasn't got a blue tick, has it?
It does have a blue tick.
No, they're paid for the blue tick. That's incredible. Yeah, I don't know. It's just a bit weird, isn't it? I'm not having it. No, it should be banned.
It was inactive for a while, this account. There is also a Mrs. Cod, which is a pink mascot for Fleetwood, who sometimes takes over, as tweeted on the 30th.
They're non-verbal mascots, aren't they?
You know, yeah, so, well, and fish, famously, yeah, very much so. So it's confusing. And also, Sam, I mean, is it worth it when you've got 122 followers? Certainly not.
Yeah,
worth
less followers than
TV.
Me. Oh, brilliant, sorry. Why did you miss out the top line? It's brilliant. What a great night at Highbury yesterday was.
I mean, oh, yeah, heart emoji.
That's tremendous. It's not clearly not great at constructing sentences. Maybe did it with the blue gloves on and just struggled on the keypad. In mascot news, I just found out this morning that the beaver at Hampton and Richmond is called Billy the Beaver, which is the name of my son, Billy, not the beaver bit. And we shall be there for the game that they're advertising against Truro in a couple of weeks' time. And I think you can put your name in a hat of some description to go on and have a kick about with him at half time. So maybe I will get Billy on there with his namesake.
Yeah, let's have an update on that next week, please. I feel like I'm going to lose too much of my day just scrolling through Captain Cod's feed. There's lots of games that he didn't make March 1st, 2023. Today's a big day. Unfortunately, I can't be there tonight. Why not? What else have you got on?
It's all the confirmation you needed that it is, in fact, a derby at the weekend. It's there. It's there in print from the man in the know.
All right. Well, let's boost his followers up a little bit if it is indeed a he. And yeah, I don't know. Shout out to Captain Birdseye. Maybe he can help too. That is where we're going to leave it for this week, though. Hope you have a great weekend wherever you are. If you see a mascot dressed as a fish, do look up whether they've got a social media account and try and help them out as well. We should be back with another show next week. But for now, though, it's goodbye.